Welcome to San Francisco City Insider, the Chronicle's podcast on the people and politics making headlines in the city by the bay. I'm Chronicle City Hall reporter Trisha Thirani, and today I'm talking to Supervisor-elect Dean Preston, who beat out Supervisor Valley Brown by less than 200 votes in the November 5th election. This was a big deal for many reasons. One, Brown was appointed by Mayor London Breed. And two, Preston ran on a platform of making big, bold, sweeping change in San Francisco. I spoke to him about his vision for the city and how he'll shake up the Board of Supervisors. Here's my interview with the new District 5 Supervisor. Supervisor Preston, thank you for coming into the 901 podcast room.
Thanks for having me in.
So this is the second time you've run for supervisor. So the first time was obviously against London Breed, who was the former District 5 supervisor in 2016, correct?
That's right.
And so then you only lost by a very small fraction of the votes. And now this time around, you beat out her appointee by 187 votes, something crazy like that. What helped you squeak out the victory this time? What was different about your campaign? What's different about San Francisco and District 5 now that you were able to come out on top?
Yeah, well, the races were really different in a lot of ways. So apparently District 5 voters like close elections because mm-hmm. we've now had two in a row.
Every vote counts.
Yeah, glad this one came out in my favor. But yeah, it was really different. I mean, in 2016, I was running against London Breed, who was an elected incumbent. Mm-hmm. And so voters knew her really well. And it was really an uphill battle to run against an elected incumbent in that way. This time around, I think we were a little more on equal footing in terms of the incumbent was an appointee and mm-hmm. didn't have that same name recognition across the district that London Breed did in 2016. One of the other big differences is just this was a very low turnout election. Mm-hmm. So this was about a 45% or a little higher turnout compared to over 80% turnout
right.
in 2016. So we had, a lot fewer folks going to the polls. Usually that favors a more moderate or more conservative candidate. Mm-hmm. And so we had to overcome that being the more progressive candidate in the race.
Right, right. And for those listeners who didn't follow the District 5 race too quickly, the incumbent that we're talking about is Supervisor Valley Brown, who was appointed by London Breed when London Breed was elected mayor. And Valley Brown served for about a year and a half. And you had been pretty much campaigning since she was appointed.
Right. I pulled papers to run once the seat became vacant. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had almost 20,000 voters vote for me in 2016.
Right.
Been active in the district since then on a lot of issues, everything from Prop F, the right to counsel for tenants, mm-hmm. To Prop C, the homelessness measure last year, and really doing a lot of organizing in neighborhoods across the district. So once London Breed became mayor and the seat opened up, I pulled papers mm-hmm. At that time.
Right. And so in this race, you ran as a Democratic Socialist. You're part of Democratic Socialists of America, correct? What does that mean?
Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, it's the first time that a Democratic Socialist has run as a Democratic Socialist in about 40 years. Mm-hmm. My understanding is Harry Britt, actually, in the same neighborhood. It was the last time a Democratic Socialist has run for office and won mm-hmm. in San Francisco. So it's a big deal for me as a candidate. It's a big deal for the Democratic Socialists of America chapter here, as well as the national DSA. And I think, when we started running and talking about being a Democratic Socialist, a lot of pundits, folks thought that was a fairly risky thing to do. Hmm. I think in a lot of ways...
Why did they think it was risky?
Well, I think there's been really an evolution in people's thinking about Democratic Socialism. Certainly
right.
things changed after Bernie Sanders' run in 2016, where there's more of an openness to Democratic Socialism mm-hmm. and less of a stigma around socialism. And in fact, a lot of excitement, particularly among younger voters
right.
For Democratic Socialism. But, I think we... sort of went out on a bit of a limb and being really upfront about that without it was being honest with voters and I felt like it was something that I wanted to do as a candidate. But no idea how that would play out with voters.
Right.
And so throughout the course of the year, though, I think I came to see it as a really positive thing mm-hmm. in really opening up discussions with voters and signaling to voters what my priorities were and how our campaign was rooted in really an ideology of taking on a lot of the status quo forces in this city.
Right.
And I think running as a Democratic Socialist in some ways was shorthand for that kind of policy priorities.
You and Mayor London Breed, I would imagine, have some sort of tension. I mean, you ran against her in 2016 and you beat out her appointee. I mean, have you spoken to her since you've been elected? And, you know, what has that conversation been like?
No, haven't heard from the mayor.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if there's tension, it's one way, it's not mutual. I mean, I don't think that there's not a lot of, you know, engagement. And she certainly endorsed my opponent and you know, made clear who she wanted to win the race.
Right.
But there's not a you know, personal friction or anything that exists. I have not had, you know, any negative interactions with her.
Mm-hmm. And so we touched on this earlier when we were talking about you running as a Democratic Socialist. So obviously you ran on a platform of big, bold, sweeping change in the city, challenge the status quo, which was different from Supervisor Valerie Brown, who ran she was more of like, I've been around City Hall, I know how this political apparatus works, and we want change, but change does take time, where you, on the other hand, were like, why are we waiting? Let's push these things, et cetera. So what is bold move number one now that you've been elected?
Well, yeah, there's probably bold move, you know, one through 50, and it's a matter of sorting through which ones are gonna happen first. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's certainly some things that I talked about on the campaign trail that remain really high priorities in terms of broad categories. You know, affordable housing, homelessness, and public transportation are the three things I talked about as being top priorities.
And for also nearly every elected official in San Francisco.
Yep,
as well.
That's right. And so, you know, those continue to be what I plan to prioritize. In terms of more specific measures, one, I'm really glad to see and happy to be part of the effort to get a storefront vacancy tax, which was something that that I talked about in my 2016 race, and that's very popular in District 5 and hopefully across the city. Mm-hmm. So that's moving forward. Supervisor Peskin's leading that effort. That's moving forward to the March ballot, and so I, you know, intend to be campaigning and for that and helping with that, because that was one of our top issues in 2016 and again this time around that folks really wanted. Other things, you know, there's been a long promise navigation center for District 5 that has not come to fruition.
Right.
So I'm very committed to making that happen as soon as possible. The right to counsel measure, which was, you know, a measure that I wrote and we passed in 2018, is, you know, is a right to counsel for tenants facing evictions, probably the single thing the city can do that will reduce eviction rates the most. And I'm very concerned, and there's been some reporting in recent months around the city not fulfilling its obligations under Proposition F to provide a right to counsel to tenants, you know, facing eviction. That's an example where I think it's important to have a supervisor who, you know, it's the mayor's office that is tasked with fully implementing and guaranteeing the right to counsel.
Right.
The voters were very clear on that. And there are people being turned away right now who deserve and have a right to counsel. Who are facing eviction. So, you know, for me, that's certainly a priority issue moving forward, calling for hearings very early on after I take office on Prop F implementation.
Okay.
And that's something I'd like to do as soon as possible.
Right. So first board meeting mid-December, we'll see you address all of these things.
I can't guarantee first, but, you know, one of the early meetings.
So let's transition into talking about homelessness. You touched on this as well. Obviously, this is the biggest, most obvious issue facing San Franciscans today. And you had mentioned how one of your priorities in office would be finding a navigation center. And obviously, Supervisor Brown, this was a big priority of hers. And she said that she was consistently looking for a space in the city, but she said it's just not that easy to find a space. You need somewhere that's, you know, first of all, big enough, something that's financially viable, because navigation centers are only temporary structures. You know, if Supervisor Brown couldn't do it, how would you approach this differently to make it happen?
Yeah, I mean, we will make it happen.
What time frame can we hold you on?
I mean, starting on the process immediately, right? Mm-hmm. It's and this is one of the very few things where in the campaign people wanted a commitment of, you know, where is this going to be?
Right.
You know, I said during the campaign, I don't think it's appropriate for a candidate to be like putting out locations.
Right.
But once in office where I can actually be talking to the property owners, mm-hmm. On potential sites.
Right.
My hope is to move forward, you know, and be able to announce something pretty quickly. You got to meet with neighbors and talk mm-hmm. to neighbors about it. But there's overwhelming support in District 5 for Navigation Center.
Right.
So, you know, one of the first things I plan to do is that, you know, all the supervisors who have moved and on Navigation Centers and successfully got them mm-hmm. in their districts, engage with them. There's absolutely no reason why we can get a Navigation Center, say, in District 9, but we can't in District 5.
Right. Do you have potential sites in your mind that could? I do.
I don't think it's a mystery. There are, like, underused and vacant sites right now. There are sites that are slated for development later mm-hmm. That could potentially be Navigation Centers before then. But again, the stuff that's privately owned requires a level of negotiation that mm-hmm. you kind of can't really announce that till you talk to the folks who control the property.
Right, right. So it's increasingly becoming with the conversation, you can't really talk about homelessness in the city without also talking about our mental health crisis. And, you know, we see them all over the city, people who clearly are either a danger to themselves or others. And there was a recent, earlier this year, the supervisors had considered legislation order called conservatorship, which would allow the city to basically expand its ability to compel people into care if they meet a certain threshold of being considered a danger to themselves or others. Now, that passed on the Board of Supervisors, but if you were on the board at the time, how would you have voted?
I would have voted against the conservatorship.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And why is that?
Concerns about the how it gets implemented, giving more power, frankly, to law enforcement mm-hmm. around involuntarily conserving people, and with a stated benefit that was extremely limited.
Mm-hmm.
So even by the proponents of the measure admitted that it would probably impact 4 or 5 people
right.
annually.
So
my view is that the concerns, you know, outweighed the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think there was quite a bit of time and energy and space given to a debate that I just don't think really struck at the heart of what the issues are. So mm-hmm. I was much happier to see Mental Health SF and the discussion around that, which I think will actually more fundamentally impact
mm-hmm.
The mental health crisis
in
the city than such an extensive battle over something that, as I said, at best or worst, depending how you look at it, you know, would impact a handful of people.
Yeah.
So I think for those people, it's even questionable whether the tools already exist without that
mm-hmm.
To conserve them.
Right, right. So the first phase, that was SB 1045, obviously, which
right.
that's the one that would impact 4 or 5 people. But
right.
then when the state passed SB 60, I believe it was, that it had increased it to, I believe, about 50 to 100. So it was mm-hmm. a bit bigger of a pool. But yeah, that was a conversation that was going on the board. Also, is it worth it for just this amount of people? But what is the proposed alternative? I mean, these are people who clearly need help. These are people who have been 5150'd and brought to San Francisco General at least 8 times and are deemed a danger to themselves and others. So what is the alternative if these are people who aren't going to accept the voluntary services that the city has?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean the question really is like who's going to make the decisions around when they are involuntarily committed to care,
right?
And so that's I think been the biggest concerns raised are whether that vests too much power in law enforcement essentially to be making those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately the issue is, there's the prevention side, and then there's dealing with folks once they're in crisis,
mm-hmm.
right? And the city's really failed to to be providing the kind of services that are going to prevent folks from spiraling down. Once you're in a crisis situation, then I think that Mental Health SF will probably have the biggest impact there mm-hmm. in terms of actually providing the crisis services that folks need.
Right. You know. Right. So is it the idea of conservatorship in general, or was it just the way that SB 1045 yeah. and the other legislation by Senator Scott Wiener was crafted that you take issue with?
Yeah. I mean, so look, I know, you know, have folks I trust on all sides of this issue, and mm-hmm. I'm open to hearing more. But I think the question that I have on a lot of these proposals is whether the weakness of the current system is in fact inability to conserve. And I think there's a real dispute over whether that is the problem that we need to be solving, right? So these legislative efforts that Senator Wiener has been leading and that have been moving forward locally, I think assume that expanded conservatorship, mm-hmm. right, is what is missing in the current system.
Right.
I think there's a real, you know, my concern in going down that road is that, number one, it inevitably pits one's individual liberty, right, and some, you know, level of discretion of, you know, law enforcement and medical mm-hmm. professionals against, you know, an individual's rights, and you got to balance that.
Right.
I'm not sure and haven't really been convinced that the existing conservator system does not function to address the situation you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, now we can't talk about homelessness in the city without talking about housing. So switching gears to that, how do you balance your desire for 100% below market rate housing with also the need for housing now? You have an ambitious plan of adding 10,000 units of social housing within 10 years. How would you pay for that? What is the plan for that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the immediate plan on that is to actually convene folks who have expertise. I mean, I have some, but really folks who have looked at the experience, particularly in other countries that mm-hmm. have really scaled up social housing. So we have some sites like Midtown Park Apartments, for example, that's city owned and that should be some form of social housing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and there may be other sites that can be acquired by the city. The land trust model is similar in a lot of ways, but although that tends to be targeted at smaller sites and smaller buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really excited to get to work, like bringing together experts around what a robust social housing plan looks like. And this is not, you know, we're not starting from scratch. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been extensive writing local unions like Local 21 put forward a very ambitious social housing plan just in the last budget cycle. So I'd like to, you know, convene experts around developing a more concrete plan on mm-hmm. that. But we've got to achieve those kind of goals if we're going to actually reverse the unaffordability
right.
in the city.
So there's no concrete plan for how to pay for this yet, but you're saying that you'll convene experts and everything.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is not cheap. I mean, we just passed a $600 million housing bond, and you know that will bring significant funds into creating affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's going to be the last time that we have to do a big bond if we're serious about getting anywhere near having a right to housing in the mm-hmm. city.
You're listening to my interview with Supervisor-elect Dean Preston. We'll have more after the break. Let's get back to my interview with Supervisor-elect Dean Preston. You touched on this earlier that you would like to put a ballot measure that would eventually pay for free muni for all by 2025, correct? Do you want to tell us a little bit about that plan and how you plan to achieve that?
Sure. So we raise about $200 million a year
mm-hmm.
Out of the muni budget is from fares.
Mm-hmm.
In November 2020, looking to do a ballot measure that would reduce fares significantly mm-hmm. at this point. And initial thinking is to cut fares in half and put us on a path to free Muni by 2025. And part of the reason for really putting that out clearly and sort of working backwards from that goal, from the stated goal to how we do it, is that, you know, transportation is the leading source of air pollution, right, in urban America and in the Bay Area. And if we're going to talk seriously about Green New Deal, about actually, you know, improving both air quality and decreasing, you know, emissions in the city, we've got to get to a place where public transportation is fast, is reliable, and is readily used, and that people are foregoing other options like Uber, Lyft,
right,
you know, previous iterations like Chariot, other things. So I think that, you know, just as from a policy perspective, we need to be lowering the barriers to using Muni and rewarding people who use public transportation. Mm-hmm. And so we've now been on a steady fare increase for the last decade. Fares have doubled over the last decade. They've gone up every year for the last 3 years, and we really need to reverse that. So mm-hmm. So I start from that perspective.
So we'll move to the lightning round. Mm-hmm. So you can answer in maybe two or three words or less.
All right.
All right. Favorite neighborhood haunt?
Club Wazima on Divisadero. And the Tornado. I think they're tied for me.
This is more than three words. Okay. do you own a car? And if you do, has your car ever been broken into?
Yes and yes.
How do you get around the city primarily?
Muni.
How do you feel about the e-scooters?
Mixed feelings. You only give me two or three words.
So. Yeah, this one actually will give you more words. What are the mixed feelings on e-scooters and the bike share?
Yeah, well, e-scooters, I mean, generally what gets you out of a car is a good thing. So I'm, you know, receptive. But I also think that the issues of e-scooters sharing lanes, particularly with bikes and others, create some mm-hmm. concerns, as well as them being left scattered around sidewalks and creating issues, particularly for disabled folks and seniors.
Right. Role model. Okay, now back to the two or three word. Role model San Francisco politician, past or present?
Tom Amiano.
The solution to San Francisco's homelessness crisis is?
Housing and services.
Your preferred presidential candidate is?
Bernie Sanders.
The relationship between the tech industry and City Hall is?
Complex.
The state of San Francisco today is?
Very concerning.
On that note, that's all I have. All right. Well, Supervisor Preston, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you to Dean Preston for coming in today, and thank you to King Kaufman and Karen Creighton for producing this episode, and thank you for listening.
San Francisco City Insider is part of the San Francisco Chronicle podcast network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, please subscribe and give us a quick review wherever you get your podcasts. Support San Francisco City Insider and a lot of great journalism with a print or digital subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.